There are many guests who I look forward to visiting with, and Paul Novak is certainly right there at the top of the list. Larry Wheeler here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Not only is he a great guy, but he also brings wonderful baked goods along with him. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Paul's an expert baker. He's a baking instructor, the author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. And, Paul, as always, great to see you again.
Good to be here, Larry. We've been doing this for 25 years.
Is it our anniversary this year?
Pretty much.
Oh, man, that's wonderful. And every year you bake something, and often it's a Yulekaka.
Lately, I've been coming at just before Christmas, so yeah. I've been bringing Yulekaka, which is a rich Scandinavian Christmas bread, even though it says kaka.
But, yeah.
And if people go to the recipe, I actually do not make it as rich as it calls for. It calls for two sticks of butter. I use 1.5. It calls for a cup of sugar. I use 3/4. So it could be richer.
Well, it's pretty darn rich now the way it is, and awfully tasty. And Judith has posted that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Wheeler Show Facebook page. So definitely, if you want to see how to make a good Yulekaka, just go right to the Larry Wheeler Show Facebook page, and there you have it. And in addition to Yulekaka, what have you been baking this holiday season?
In the fall, I always make a lot of pies. I've started to get better at making pie crusts. So it's not a yeast thing, but that's something I've been working on. I would sometimes around Christmas time make a Stollen, which is a yeast bread, but again, rich with a lot of shortening in it. And I like raisins. I don't put all the other stuff in. So.
Yeah, and you've brought Stollens to this.
Yes, and we've talked about lefse, which is clearly a Christmas tradition in this part of the country. And there have been all those controversies about, do you make it with potatoes? And some people said, no, it's just a flour and cream. And
and others say, no, you have to use potatoes.
Potatoes, yes.
And fresh. It's really... It's
oh, yes, yes. It's and it doesn't last that long because it's just really a dry potato pancake, which you then put the fillings in. It's a vehicle.
There we go. Paul Novak, our guest. And let me let you have a chance to join in. Are there some treats that you make every year because you want it yourself, or others expect you to make it maybe? Or do you tend to stay with the old favorites, or do you like to try new things? Give us a call with your experiences or with your questions, making questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Wheeler Show Facebook page. Maybe you've got a nice photo, too, of one of your breads, or maybe you make a Yulekaka. Love to see a photo of that as well.
And if anyone makes an Easter bread, there's no reason why you could not make that at Christmas. Traditionally, that's when the calves would be born, and there'd be a lot of cream and milk in the spring. Mm-hmm. So they're often rich sort of celebratory breads at that time of year. Christmas, it was a little harder to get some of those ingredients, but why not?
But now
we can, so why not, you know, make an Easter bread at Christmas time?
So the Easter bread has what? It has the cream, I guess.
It's going to have the cream, and it's going to have a butter. Or, you know, one or both.
Or both.
Probably eggs, and then some sort of sweetener, and some sort of spice. This has cardamom.
Oh, man. Well, and cardamom is interesting.
Yeah, I urge people not to get the shelled kind that's already been taken out of the little wrapper. It does not keep its potency very much.
Okay.
I always used to get the white, the dyed. And then I thought, well, let's try the green, which is less processed. My experience is the green pods are way harder to open up.
Oh.
And what's inside is hard. I can't do it in a mortar and pestle. I have to do it in a coffee grinder.
Wow.
So I prefer now to go back to the white, which are easy to crack open, and the little pods inside are easier to grind up.
To grind up. So, yep. Paul Novak, our guest. Let's go to Thomas in Manitowoc. Thomas, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I experiment with a lot of different sourdough breads, and I'd like to start adding some beers into my bread, like dark porters and things. I was just wondering, what percentage of beer can you add to your liquids without it affecting the yeast in the bread?
Mm-hmm. It would partly depend on the beer. If it's a beer that's got the sediment in the bottom, that's going to be one factor. If it's a very heavily roasted beer, a stout, a porter, et cetera, that'll make some difference in the taste to it. The one way that people look on things is when you malt barley, you actually change the enzymes in it. So if you get malt powder, for example, which is a common ingredient, you have to be careful if you get diastatic or non-diastatic malt powder. One still has the enzymes, and it'll mess up your bread. You only want a small amount, and the other will not. So the only way I'd look at it is that it's not just the yeast and the possible yeast in the bread, in the beer, but it might be the other, you know, the other starches and sugars and whatnot that you're also putting in.
With all the great... I'm sorry, go ahead, Thomas.
I was just wondering if the alcohol would mess up the bread, if there's a way to get the alcohol out if you left it in the cupboard overnight, if that alcohol would evaporate more, because you really don't want that in your bread either.
But it is a good point. I would not use a barley wine that's got 11% alcohol. But if you're at 5% for, let's say, a typical beer, or 5 or 7.
You're going to be 9 at some of
those.
And
it's probably, for one thing, the once you start to heat it, you know, when you bake it, the alcohol is going to go. And sourdoughs and yeast produce not just carbon dioxide, but tiny amounts of alcohol. So yeast is meant to be in a slight alcohol environment.
All right. So can you pour, like, just say I've got a bottle of a porter here, and I'm, you know, can I substitute whatever other liquid I might have or part of it for the beer? Just pour it in there?
I think if you had not real heavy a beer, you could probably do all your liquid as beer. I mean, I've done that.
Okay.
In my cookbook, I have a beer recipe where it's pretty much all the liquid is beer. And you can even use, if you want to, beer, if you make your own beer, the beer yeast from your own home brew, you can use that to rise bread.
Oh.
I mean, they're related.
Yeah.
Related
sure.
yeasts.
Why not? Yeah.
So, again, you mentioned the word experiment, and that's the way to go. All I'm going to urge you is, maybe in the beginning, do 50-50. Do half beer and half your other liquids.
Just to try.
And, you know, as a start.
Well, you know, with so many good craft beers that we have now in Wisconsin, that beer makers, it's good to hear that people are starting to think, well, let's try some of those good craft beers.
And some of the beers are not going to do anything, in a sense, for the taste.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there are beers out there I don't think are really beers.
Becky and Ryo, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, what's the difference between Stolen and Yulekaka?
Well, the Yulekaka is really a bread. I mean, it rises. It looks like a bread. It's got a crust. It's just a rich. If it would be similar to anything, it would be to challah bread. It's a rich white bread. Whereas Stolen is a lot more dense, way more shortening. It is a yeast product. It does rise. It's usually rolled with cinnamon sugar or raisins or whatnot. So for me, I bake it on a flat pan, and it would maybe be 2 inches high and 5 inches wide, you know, a whole different shape. But it's also much almost flakier.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Because it has so much shortening in it.
Yeah.
Really short, a lot of shortening in it.
So can I ask a second question about angel biscuits?
Sure.
I've heard of them. Somebody, my mother, I think, told me that she had tried them. And it is a cross between yeast bread and baking powder biscuits. The recipe that I found has actually yeast, quick rise yeast, baking powder, and baking soda in them. And so I've experimented a couple times, and so far I'm not impressed. I think I'd rather have a yeast roll, and I'd rather have a baking powder biscuit. It's not doing anything for me. Have you tried them or heard of them?
It's possible way in the past that I've tried these things. I typically would make just an old fashioned, sourdough biscuit, and just go with the baking powder, baking soda leavenings. There are, for example, pancakes that are yeast pancakes, and they often will still have baking powder and baking soda. So mixing all of those together is not unusual.
Okay.
One thing you have to be careful of is putting all that stuff in, not just more leavening, but it's a lot more sodium.
Oh, sure.
I thought they would raise really well and raise easily, and they don't. I haven't let them. None of the recipes I found said to let them sit after you cut them, just bake them right away. But they don't even raise as good as a good baking powder biscuit.
Yeah, it's possible that there's an interaction between the two, that the environment for yeast and the environment for baking soda, baking powder, is a bit different. And it's like you're not getting the best of both worlds.
Yeah, maybe they're fighting each other.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I'll put them in separate rooms and get that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thanks, Becky. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Talking baking today, holiday baking, with our guest, Paul Novak, baking instructor, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Questions or comments or experiences to share about your baking or your holiday baking, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at Sweet Treats with baker Paul Novak. And again, you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Dennis and DePere will give you a chance next. Hi, Dennis. Hold on a second here. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm a product of a Danish mother, and I've gone down the Lutefisk Lefse route, and I do make my own krumkaka. But the recipe I've seen, and I don't think it's my mother's, but the recipe calls for cardamom. I tried it once, and I really wasn't quite sure if I put too much in, too little in, but it just did not have the taste that my mother's recipe had. What does cardamom taste like?
Oh, it's sweet. One thing you said, krumkaka. Did you mean because those are cookies?
The cookies, yeah.
Yeah,
Flat rock pan them and then roll them. You can put them in the shape of a corner.
Right. I would get good quality cardamom. Go to a place like Penzi's, because the freshness does matter. If you get the container that just has the little black pods that have been taken out, or little balls that have been taken out of the pods, they lose their efficacy after a while. And they might have an off taste, but the very fresh ones, I think, are very aromatic, almost a flowery smell to that. There should be a great smell, too.
Okay, I think I made the wrong choice there. I think I bought does it come in a powder also?
Oh,
powder form?
Yeah, that would be even worse to me.
Okay.
You want to get their little white almost shells. You have to break them open. You take out these little black balls. Mm-hmm. You put them in a mortar and pestle. To be honest, then they're really fresh, and they should have this aroma right off the bat. And you will know what cardamom is once you smell it. That's
okay.
There you go, Dennis.
That probably answered my question. If I do it right the first time, I wouldn't have to call into a radio show.
Well, there's
glad you called though.
There's so many variables.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, I want to go back just before I forget about it, because sourdough has come up a couple times earlier. You are teaching a class in January on sourdough breads, making sourdough breads.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Oh, periodically, once or twice a year, I do a class for MATC, healthy breads or French baguettes. This time it's sourdough breads. So I'll bring in sourdough, talk a lot about sourdough, make some different breads with it. I just did a healthy breads one, then I used sour rye in that one. So,
oh, okay. And where do people find if they want to sign up?
It's through the adult and continuing education end of MATC, Madison College.
Madison College, yeah.
They have a big catalogs and brochures. You can register online. I do not remember the day. It's a Tuesday.
But in January.
In January.
Okay. Well, and I'm sure Judith will try and find a link for our Facebook page. So we'll do that. And while I'm talking about links, we were talking about Paul's Ulakaka recipe earlier, and we have that recipe, and it's posted up on WPR.org site or on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got the recipe. Pretty straightforward, actually.
And I gave that to you long time ago.
Long ago. Janet in McQuanigo, your turn next. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a question about the amount of yeast to use. This is a recipe that my family has used for years and years, but there was some controversy about the amount of yeast in the package. So I bought the jar of yeast, and it says that it's 2 1/4 or 2 1/2 teaspoons per package. So if I did that in this recipe, I'd be putting in like 10 teaspoons of yeast. It's a cup of butter, 2 egg yolks, a cup of sour cream, 3 cups of flour, salt, vanilla, and this yeast. That seems like a lot of yeast.
Wait, how many tablespoons of yeast?
How many? It would be, it says 1 ounce. That would be like 10 teaspoons according to the jar.
Okay.
That's a lot, yes.
That's wrong.
On the other hand,
or maybe not.
Sometimes with rich, like a Stollen or this Ulakaka, called for 2 tablespoons of yeast, which is more than I usually use, even though it's a white bread, because of the extra.
This is very rich, too, because a cup of butter and 2 egg yolks and a cup of sour cream to 3 cups of flour is a heavy.
But that still seems like a lot. Well, one thing I should explain is that in a lot of people with their old recipes, if they called for, well, some of them called for cake yeast, but let's just say it called for a packet of dry yeast. Well,
right.
A packet used to be a tablespoon. Then they changed it to 2 1/4 teaspoons, which is about 3/4 of the size. This messed up so many people over the years. And when I did my cookbook 25 years ago, it had changed, you know, before that. And so I figured that out at the time, but not everybody knows this. So that's why
I started thinking about it. But it just seems like too much yeast for me. I baked these this year, and I used 4 teaspoons of yeast in a double batch. And they did rise. They don't raise a lot because it is such a heavy. You put cinnamon and sugar between layers, and you make 8 layers, and then cut them into strips and twist them and bake them.
So the 4 tablespoons for 2 batches.
No, 4 teaspoons.
4 teaspoons. It's all about how you want the product to turn out. If you want it to be fluffier, you'd put in more. So maybe that original recipe somewhere was for a much lighter dough. But I still am suspicious of how many teaspoons that was.
I was too. That's why I didn't use it. If it was cake yeast, did 1 ounce of cake yeast equal 1 ounce of dry yeast?
No. No, see, that's the other possibility, that was really 1 ounce of cake yeast. And if you buy cake yeast, you'll look at the package and it'll tell you how many teaspoons or tablespoons of dry yeast that is.
Oh, I wonder.
Because see, that's not dehydrated.
Right.
See, so
right.
An ounce of cake yeast was a typical amount to be used. For all I know, that's equivalent to a tablespoon.
That's probably what this is.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah,
I bet.
But I'm just saying that even got more complicated when people were told to use a packet, and then the packet got smaller, and people wondered what was going on. You know, nobody.
In fact, the first line in the direction here probably gives it away. It says crumble yeast.
Yes, there you go. That was cake yeast. Yes,
yep.
And that's what a lot of old recipes were for. And you can still buy it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Janet.
Well, thank you.
Where do you go to buy it?
I've seen it here at Century at Metcalf's.
Okay, so a grocery store should have it.
Yeah, I will guarantee they still have them. I used to send people to the Willie Street Co-op to look for dried sourdough culture that you could make your own culture with. And last time I was there, it was not available.
Oh.
So I told them they should get it back. So it's called Gold. I'll have to think of it.
It'll come. In the meantime, let's go to Kathleen in Delavan. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I just caught the tail end of the person who called in about the sourdough biscuits as I was feeding my new sourdough starter. And I had this amazing recipe from Sunset Magazines in the late 80s. I made these up, and you could put them in the refrigerator for 4 days, and they were so high. And I found this recipe, and it's doing the same thing as she talked about. It's totally not working like it did before. And the reason I got back into sourdough is I'm hearing that it's much, it like pre-digests the wheat, so people who have difficulties maybe, you know, with the GI, that they can eat it.
That is a possibility, but first question is, are you using the same sourdough starter that you once did?
No, I'm not.
Well, there's possibly your difference.
Yeah.
Sourdough cultures change over time, so if you have one, it might be stable. But if you start up a new one, for example, it might take a while to get it going. And if you...
Well, mine has been going a couple months, and it's still... They're just... I mean, the biscuits used to rise like 3.5 inches. They were just unbelievable.
All I'm going to guess is... I'm going to guess you have your sourdough culture is a little bit different. Are you putting yeast in also?
Yes.
Okay. So one thing you could do is just try right off the bat putting a little extra dry yeast in.
Okay.
And maybe over time your sourdough culture will get more vigorous. When people, for example, get a culture from San Francisco, I mean, I got mine 30-some years ago, it'll become a Wisconsin culture. And if you start one up from the dry, dehydrated, it's going to take a number of months to get that one, you know, to have its great, you know, have its vigor.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just, you know, again, I'm throwing out ideas. I'm not saying
well,
I have the answers.
Might be more, you know, make more bread trying sourdough if that's a possibility, that because it's essentially pre-digested, you know, especially if you let it sit overnight.
Yes. I even let a lot of my bread sit overnight with the sourdough or without it, and just in a sense letting the ingredients ferment.
Yeah.
Remember the old nursery rhyme, peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold, peas porridge in the pot 9 days old. People often, when they made oatmeal, it sat out. It was fermented.
Oh.
I'm not saying.
I don't know if I'd want to ferment.
I don't know about 9 days, but the whole idea is that wild yeast and bacteria do change the flour somewhat, turn it into sugars, and do, in a sense, pre-digest it. I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I was thinking back, this just came up in discussion not long ago. I had one of my PhD students who came from Alaska, John Trent, this is like 25 years ago, brought with him some sourdough starter that had been his grandmother's.
Yes.
And he gave me a piece of it, and so I used it for a long time, And then I went away on vacation, and while I was gone, the refrigerator quit.
Oh, see, you have to have backups. You have to give it away to other people so they have a backup copy.
Oh, man, so I lost that.
Yeah,
that
see, if you have a sourdough, it is dependent upon you. You
know, yeah.
You have to give your life to the keeping that sourdough going forever. Yes.
I was and I was doing a really good job for a long, long time, and it just I was sick. That was the worst part of that refrigerator going, aside from the enormously bad smell.
Yeah. And every once in a while a culture will go bad, and then you might have to create a new one. So.
Well, and as you say, it's probably after several years it's no longer an Alaskan.
Exactly. Right. Unless you have a food lab with a HEPA filter and whatnot that's keeping out all the other bacteria, yeah, it's going to become a Wisconsin sourdough.
Man. Cindy in Plainfield, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you've ever heard of a bread called Beterbrotten. My family is from the New Glarus and Monroe area, so I've always assumed it was a Swiss bread, but it might be a German bread.
Is it a pear bread, did you say?
Well, I've also heard it called pear bread, so yeah.
Pears in it or a pear shape?
Pears in it.
Ah, okay.
Wow.
And that's not an unusual thing. A lot of cultures would put apples in bread. It's an easy thing to put in.
Okay. Do you have any clue where I might find a recipe?
Well, if you think it's German or if you think it's Swiss, look at Swiss or German cookbooks.
Okay.
Of course, now you just would Google it, but I would tend to, you know, go to actual cookbooks.
Okay.
And just see it, but just Google the name and see what comes up.
I can spell Swiss pear bread. But
well, then you just try alternate spellings, yes. This is the one thing Wikipedia is wonderful for.
Yeah, I actually just went on my phone, and I typed in Swiss pear bread and got one up right away from Kathy Cutler.
Okay.
A festive bread book by Kathy Cutler. She made it the first time in honor of a Swiss colleague, so it'll be the first thing that pops up on your search engine.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Isn't it amazing now?
Well, there's so many. When I was on last time, people were talking about potica, which is a Serbian holiday bread, okay, which is not a stolen but similar. So many cultures would have their own specific cookies, their own specific bread, their own specific pastry. And some unique and others just variants on certain themes.
You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234, talking holiday baking, and well, just baking in general, with our guest today, Paul Novak, baking instructor, author of a Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More, an extraordinary baker, I can tell you that for sure. And, oh, man, in the studio today, the wonderful aromas of the ulekaka. Oh,
but it's man. Not as it. You know, I'm disappointed using the green pods. Yes, I'm gonna just get rid of those.
Oh man! Well, I tell you what, Mike in South Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, a couple of things. My wife is Swiss, and that Swiss pear bread's easy. Just take pears and grind them up in a food processor, like a pear sauce, and use that as your watering agent for your bread. That's simple. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys have talked about it, but I love making no-knead bread. You just use salt, water, and flour and yeast. It's a very moist bread, a moist dough. You put it in a Dutch oven, you let it stand overnight to rise, and you bake it for the first half hour to 45 minutes in the Dutch oven, and you take off the top. It makes a rustic bread full of bubbles, and it's very easy to make.
Yeah, Mark Bittman, New York Times, had a recipe for that some years ago, and I use a cast iron Dutch oven, and it really does work. It's a very simple, really wet dough. And it's almost like you couldn't knead it.
Yeah,
it's so wet.
Yeah, good points. Thank you, Mike, for calling. I appreciate it. And I've done it in crock pot.
Sure.
You need a container inside the crock pot.
Yeah.
Typically, but, you know, it's no need. I mean, you're right. It's pretty moist, but, oh, it's wonderful to have that aroma going all day long in the crock pot, for sure. Let's see. I wanted to go to a comment from Amy, who wanted to clarify that sourdough bread is not more safe for people with a gluten issue. She didn't want people to misunderstand that sourdough is still a problem.
It won't change the gluten, which is a protein. It'll change the carbohydrates, which is why some people, for example, who are really allergic to the carbohydrates in wheat might get away with using spelt flour. Maybe, maybe not. But yes, they all have gluten. So that's a whole different issue. But that's why it's complicated with wheat. It's not always about the gluten. It can be about the carbohydrates.
Peg in Fitchburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have here a local source for a recipe for pear bread. In the Flavor of Wisconsin cookbook by Therese Allen.
Oh, sure.
Harva Hackton.
I have that book, Harva Hackton.
Mm-hmm. Page 153. I have the original version, not Therese. I also have Therese Allen's book. But anyways, that caller should try that.
So
it's local.
Yeah, so it's in Harva Hackton's book, and it should be easy enough to get.
Yes, it should be.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Since New Glarus has and other places around here have such a Swiss influence, it should be easy to find Swiss breads, just like it is easy to find information about Norwegian or Swedish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have Rebecca in Waupaca next. Thank you for calling, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you. I was calling because my mother-in-law, who's now passed, used to make something called Worsley Broat. And she said her mom used to make it. Their family is Austrian and German descent.
German. What is it? Give me the name of that again. I'm sorry, Rebecca.
Sure. She said it was Worsley Broat. But I know German, and it doesn't sound like any. I mean, the only thing I can think of is Werflicher Broat, which would be like bread you throw around, which was kind of what the recipe was. She like cut up pieces of bread, used egg and ham and other things, and I guess I wondered if your guest had ever heard of it and if he knows where I can find the recipe.
Again, there are so many breads out there that I would know certain Scandinavian ones or this or that, but I can't know all of them. So I'm just going to refer you to try to find a good German recipe book, and you might have to go to finding ones that actually come from Germany, because there's so many local. I mean, Bavaria is different than the North, and each has their own styles in terms of, you know, even beers.
So this is a bread that has ham in it?
Well, so it was something she would make in a pan, and she would saute like bread and egg together, like just pieces of bread thrown in there. And then if she had ham on hand from, you know, Christmas or something, she'd toss that in. And then she also would put powdered sugar on top when it was all done, so it was kind of like a sweet and salty sort of a deal.
Ah, so it was actually sweet and savory. Interesting.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yes.
I know it was.
Well, maybe I'll stay listening, Rebecca, because it's quite possible somebody else will have an answer for you.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Dan in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Are you calling me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Say, I just wondered about making sourdough gluten-free bread. And I don't know if you've had that on already, but I probably missed it. But how do you deal with the culture and all that?
Well, pretty much the basic sourdoughs are either going to be a wheat or a sour rye is going to be a rye flour, and both of those have gluten in them. So
yeah, right.
I don't know if you can make a culture using, for example, rice flour. I doubt it. It's just not going to hold. Only certain flours are gluten-free. I mean, even barley and oats have small amounts of gluten in them.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. if you could truly make a sourdough, but you could probably make some sort of culturing of flours and use that in a gluten-free bread. And also, gluten-free breads are typically baking powder and baking soda, not yeast breads. There are a few, but it's almost like two different worlds, the sourdough or yeast versus the gluten-free baking powder.
Can you use the gluten, like wheat or whatever, spelt or whatever, and use that and still, I hear that people that have gluten intolerance can still eat the regular sourdough bread because
well, this is where it gets so complicated. I'm going to bet some people think they have gluten intolerance, but they just have problems with wheat. And when they go to an alternative wheat, they get away with it. And some people develop, but then they get problems later. If somebody's truly allergic to wheat, I mean allergic in a sense, or really intolerant, yeah, they're not going to be able to handle sourdough.
Oh, there we go. Thanks for calling, Dan. Appreciate your call. Linda on our Facebook page says that she has a recipe for Swiss pear bread. And we're going to try to get it posted. So for those of you, it is kind of interesting sounding, you know, there'll probably be a lot more pear breads made in the next couple of weeks than would have normally been the case. And you and I sitting here today before the show to start, if you'd have said, well, we're going to spend a lot of time on pear breads.
Yeah, yeah. It's always interesting where it goes.
Oh, yes. It is. And just one final comment from Janet. She's making pierogi today. She says, fortunately, with the less cold and dry weather, I haven't had to throw any dough away today. It's our Christmas Eve tradition, which we continue even though our experienced pierogi-making elders are all gone. Now it's up to me, and I enjoy it. It's a tradition in their family. And Judith says it's a tradition in her family as well.
Yeah, and people should realize pierogies are different than pierogies.
Yeah.
Pierogies being Russian and I think baked, and pierogies being more a dumpling and sometimes then also a pan fried, like a pot sticker.
Well, I'm telling you what, Paul, this has gone so quickly. Thank you so much. Next time you're on, we have to have you on for 90 minutes.
We didn't get to pies. Yes.
We didn't even get to pies, and that's what you've really been doing a lot with. Maybe we'll have you back just to do pies. if you've got the time, we'll try and schedule that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much. Paul Novak, he's got a class coming up on sourdough bread baking in the Madison area at Madison College. And I think we're going to post that on our Facebook page. But otherwise, if you go to the Madison College website, if you're in the Madison area, it's in January on a Tuesday, you may want to sign up for it. Paul's a really engaging guy, and it's really always a pleasure to talk with him around the holidays or any time of the year on the show. It's been a longstanding tradition, 25 years he's been on with me on the show. About this time of the year. Coming up, we're going to visit with candy maker Elizabeth LeBeau, who's been with us a few times now as well. So she's a newer but equally tasty traditionalist. I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.